This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and it's great to have you with us on our Main Street across the state of North Dakota this time of day, because it's a special day on our Main Street. Once a year, we check in with Barb Gravel, our Prairie Public production manager, to find out what is happening with Prairie musicians, because it debuts this Friday. Hi, Barb.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, this is always fun because we hear lots of new music, at least I do. You've obviously been on the road trying to find people, right?
I absolutely have. That is, I tell you, one of the best parts of my job is working with the bands, looking for new musicians to feature on Prairie Musicians. And so, yes, we have a great season coming up.
Well, tell us about the show. It airs Friday. When and how long is it and how long does it run?
Well, here's the story for this year, Doug. We were lucky enough to be able to feature 10 regional bands. Two of them are from the state of North Dakota. Eight of them are from based in Minnesota. And this is our 10th year producing Prairie Musicians. So we're so proud of this. The first three bands will be on Prairie Public Broadcasting this Friday, July 6th, starting at 8 p.m. This is the first episode, then 8:30, and then 9 p.m. And then every Friday here in July.
So it's an hour and a half show?
It is. It is.
Well, let's get a sample here. Matthew Griswold is absolutely the first one. He's the debut guy in the debut show, and that's July 6th, Friday at 8 o'clock. We're going to hear him. Tell us about him.
He is a great guy. So singer-songwriter from Minneapolis. He's been touring all around. He's a U.S. Army soldier. And so interestingly enough, he's been able to bridge between his life in service and then writing about some of those experiences and helping other veterans, if you will, get through some issues. And so he has some very, very powerful messages in his music. And I think the audiences are going to appreciate him.
So a little therapeutic music here.
Exactly. And what a great guy. God, all of them are.
Well, let's hear a sample. What are you going to play for us from him?
We are going to hear from Matthew Griswold, Till It's Gone.
Today my eyes are open wide. Today my eyes are open so that I can see the sunshine dripping from the sky. And with him I believe in all I see. With him I have faith in all that be. Until they're gone. Today my hands are open wide. Today my hands are open so that I can feel the raindrops splatter on my skin. And with them I know all the things I've done. With them I know what I will become. Until they're gone.
That is reminiscent of somebody. That's a beautiful song and a wonderful rhythm and a very engaging sound to me.
His voice is just one that just grabs your attention. And, I mean, when you see him play live and in person, and I encourage all of the viewers and listeners to research some of these bands. Look, most of them have websites and amazing tour dates. And so, yeah, Matthew Griswold, he's one that you're not going to want to miss.
And he's a veteran, and he's got these messages that are woven into the lyrics, I take it?
Exactly. And so, yeah, just a great, great musician. You're really going to want to catch that one.
Well, help me out with the next musician.
Yes. On Friday at 8:30, we have Kwaisian L. Kwaisian is a hardworking young musician. He was born and raised in Chicago. He's lived in North Dakota for quite some time and just loves it. He just loves having a nice, solid bass and getting to know so many people in the community. I think the community really has just wrapped their arms around Kwaisian because he's just so lovable. But goodness, is he hardworking. A lot of his influences are kind of an Ed Sheeran style. He does a lot of the looping, which is very popular these days, especially with Ed Sheeran. and so plays, records some of that, and then plays it back as he's singing the rest of the song and, you know, playing other riffs. So he's a great musician.
Well, What's he going to play for us? What are we going to sample from Kwaisi and L?
He's going to play Ageless.
Well, I'm speechless. Look at everywhere we've been, and I'm breathless. This is where it all began, if I'm honest. Can't believe it's been so long, my dear. You're my fortress. You're my strength and my defense. On the surface, all my ways make sense if I'm honest. Can't believe we made it all these years. This love is ageless.
Ageless is the name of the tune. We heard it in the lyric, and that was not what I was expecting to hear. Interesting.
Yeah, he's a great guy. A lot of his music is a little bit more subtle, sounding just as you heard. But yeah, he plays all over the region. And so if you ever have a chance to catch him in a coffee house or anywhere in the region, it's a really fun. A lot of these bands, Doug, I'm finding are really appreciating performing live. They really appreciate getting feedback from the audience and having a nice organic experience where they can see who they're playing to and, you know, kind of change things up if need be. If the audience is really getting into it or dancing, then they can, you know, kind of kick it up or take it down a couple notches. So that was nice to hear from this group of musicians this year.
Oh, that's a nice, intimate style that he has, Kwaisi and L from West Fargo. Now, the human element, that's the last one on Friday, July 6th. They come on the air at about 9 o'clock.
Yes.
I have heard one of the members of the human element perform, and it was remarkable guitar work.
Absolutely. This is an amazing band. They have a lot of power. They have a lot of talent. And they're directing it in such a way that, I mean, you hear one song and it's almost a little bit of like a country vibe, but then they're very rock-centric also. And so I think a lot of them bring a lot of their different talents to the group and they're, you know, they jam wonderfully together. We've got Brant and we've got Carrie and Seth Holden and Maddie J, the band members. And yeah, I'm really thankful that they were able to participate this year. And we do have a song from them.
Well, last week at the Night Bazaar in downtown Fargo, 1/4 of the human element performed. So I'm anxious to hear all four of them together. What's the song?
Ain't Got No Time.
Ain't got no time. It's all about that money. Ain't got no time. It's all about that money. Heard it last year. You asked me to go on vacation.
Well, that might have been one of the bands that was rocking the studio up here when you were recording.
I bet it was, right? A lot of the times we record the shows in the studio and kind of the whole Prairie Public Building kind of shakes just a little bit,
well,
but in a good way.
That's the human element, and they close out the July 6th premiere of Prairie Musicians, which runs, how long is it going? Until the end of July.
Exactly, much. Until July 27th. So yeah, we're really proud, and you know, just a reminder that the music that these bands are playing is original music.
Wow.
So these are hardworking musicians who practice, write music throughout the year. And, you know, here they're just performing 6, 7, 8 songs for us. And they have a repertoire that's huge. So, yeah, you see them out and about and you may hear some of these songs or many others or get their albums and all that sort of thing.
Well, Prairie Musicians is a good show in its own right, obviously. We're previewing it today, but I've actually seen segments of Prayer Musicians occasionally, little pieces of it show up in the television service programming. I think maybe when you have a little gap to fill or whatever, it's a lot of fun to see that kind of variety.
And I hear that from a lot of the viewers. They write in and say, oh, in between, you know, my two favorite shows on Prairie Public, there was a little short 2-minute interstitial and there was a band. And yeah, we like to sing our praises and really tout our talent here in Prairie Public land.
Well, that's the first Friday of a bunch of them in July. This is Prairie Musicians, and Barb Gravel is our Prairie Public production manager, the person who produces Prairie Musicians. Let's jump to the next week, which would be July 13th.
Yes, July 13th, we have some amazing bands. At 8 p.m., we will have a band named Chrome, so that'll be fun. At 8:30, we'll have the Jeff Krause Trio, and then at 9 p.m., we'll have Michael Shines. And so another great group of musicians, always fun to work with them. So Chrome, which is on Friday the 13th at 8 p.m., they're a group of cousins, actually. So that's a fun group. There are four of them. Some kind of live in the Viking, Minnesota area, East Grand Forks, Minnesota area. But they've been playing together, oh my goodness, since I think childhood. So, you know, into the 20-year range. And
wow,
you can really tell they're related and they're very best of friends and cousins. But yeah, all original music from Chrome.
Well, what's the original piece we're going to share today?
Fun title. It's called Garbage Bag of Memories.
That had a country vibe to it.
It did, didn't it? Yeah, they do a little bit of country. They do, gosh, just a little bit of everything. Blues, rock, a little bit of folk. But yeah, I think after performing together for so long, they're just comfortable doing anything.
And Chrome, in this case, is spelled K-R-O-M-E.
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact, is. And they perform all over the region. They have a great website. And so, yeah, I encourage everyone to kind of get out there, especially in the summer, to get out and to see live music. Oh, my goodness. You know, if they're outside or just if you it stays light so late, get out there and listen to some live music.
Okay, Chrome kicks off the Friday, July 13th show of Prairie Musicians at 8:30 in that hour and a half show. The Jeff Krause Trio is on. So that says there are three of them, right?
There are three of them. Jeff Krause, an amazing musician. He had been solo for quite some time and just really, you know, kind of really wanted to get that out there with a band a little bit more and perform for groups and do some performances that you can do with a couple other guys as opposed to a solo artist. And so, gosh, it's a neat storytelling style he has with his lyrics. And then you'll be able to tell as soon as you hear it, it's got kind of a blues and southern soul kind of feeling. And so, yeah, he's got some good music. The name of this song is called Drown in the City.
Months traveling dark and empty road, we'll spin the driver's seat as home. Truck stop, hotel, motel, all the same. At least no one in Ohio asks where you've been. Folks on Lindell, well, they're kind and they mean well. Rent me a room from a lady named Al. Waitress of Victor's as if I had my fill. Came to
Well, that's the Jeff Krause Trio. What was the name of that tune again?
That was called Drown in the City. So that's a great song. A lot of his have kind of that raspy feel that he has in his throat, but it's real southern, kind of bluesy. So a lot of good sounds there. Doug, I just want to remind you that I'm able to produce this show because of some funding we get from the Minnesota Legacy Amendment Grant and the kind people at the North Dakota Council on the Arts. So without them, I wouldn't be able to produce these amazing shows with these amazing artists.
Prairie Public thanks them.
We sure do. We sure do.
Michael Shines closes out the July 13th show, and introduced me to him.
Great guy. He's from St. Cloud. Another one who kind of has, I don't want to say Ed Sheeran, but kind of that solo-y artist style. He also does looping. He did not do it on our show. He performs all over the region. I know I've seen him at Carlos Creek Winery, and he's put out some albums. So great guy. A lot of his lyrics deal with his life, you know, kids, that sort of thing. And so, yeah, great, great people to work with, as a matter of fact, all of these musicians. I think the song we have from him is called The Other Side.
Starry eyes and cellophane, she takes her walk, she makes her plans. The truck bells down the avenue, there's broken glass and missing pew at church. Maybe I was wrong, maybe time's too strong. Are we falling further? Are the lights to take us home? Gone. We break it, title to ask the question why. We live and then we die. I think I'm fine. Maybe I'll write you from the other side.
Well, that's Michael Shines. That's some wonderful guitar work there. Wow.
And his range, Doug, is amazing. His vocal range, oh my goodness. He could sing highs, he can come deep, and it's just really, oh my goodness, really, really nice sounding.
Well, that's the first 2 weeks of Prairie Musicians. Again, it's Fridays at 8 o'clock Central on our television service here at Prairie Public. Barb, when you go looking for musicians, what are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for original music.
Yes.
That's one thing. So I really want to work with those musicians who are trying to make a way of it, right? Trying to write about their lives and put things together and get their careers going. I'm looking for a balance of, Minnesota and North Dakota-based musicians.
Sure.
And then I like for each season to be a little bit eccentric or kind of eclectic with some of the mixes. I like to have some soloists, some groups, not too big of groups, blues, country. In the past, we've had some reggae music. We've had polka bands. We've had a lot of different mixes. You know, I should say that for next year, I already have three groups who've contacted me.
Wow.
And are already on the list.
They're seeking you out.
They are a little bit. So that's a lot of fun. And I should say, if there are musicians out there who are interested and think they wonder if they fit the criteria, they can always call or email me. Here at work, my email is barbgravel@prairiepublic.org.
G-R-A-V-E-L.
Gravel. Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
And lots of variety. We've just had a great sample of that, and we'll talk about some of the other musicians coming up to mm-hmm. round out the month. But does anybody ever repeat, or is this always brand new stuff? I mean, what I'm getting at is, do you have groups come back?
We've had people ask to come back. Yes, we've had people who've put out a new album, or maybe they've changed their style a little bit, or maybe they're playing with one addition or two different people. We try to give new people an opportunity as opposed to, kind of having repeat performers on. I'm not opposed to it, but at this point, we have not repeated any bands.
Well, it's got to be terrific for these bands to have a video they can show. I mean, because they're auditioning all the time for gigs.
Exactly. And they ask me that. They say, can we use anything that we recorded on Prairie Musicians for a demo tape or something, and I say yes. I mean, for me, the more eyes that see this program, the better. I mean, I'm so proud of my staff, especially. I should mention all of them for building the set, for the 5-6 cameras that we use during the taping, the amazing audio technician of Josh Vorek this year, and Dustin Ellingson. They helped me out tremendously. And so I couldn't do it with my entire team, and I want to praise them. But yeah, it's a great quality show, and so proud of it. And we just want as many people to see it as possible.
Well, I was struck by when I was listening to these various cuts that we were sharing with our audience today. You know, musicians can be very fussy about their sound. They'll go into the venue, they'll do a sound check, they'll, you know, work on stuff. So how long is setup typically for shooting one of these things?
Each session lasts about 4 hours, I would say. And again, that's a testament to my crew. They're so great. I mean, they just get in there and they start helping the musicians unpack the drum sets and string the cables. And like I said, Josh this year and Dustin working on audio, they were just the ultimate professionals. Clearly, they've done this before. And they're the key people that I'm proud that I brought in, as a matter of fact, this year. So hope to work with them again. But yeah, we worked with so many great musicians.
So 4+ hours to do a half-hour segment, basically.
Exactly.
And, well, again, it sounds great. Let's move on to the next week, July 20th. We don't have cuts for these artists yet, mm-hmm. but Nita Velo is a well-known name around this part.
Yes, Nita is, oh my goodness, just a pillar of experience and talent. She's a Minnesota native, and she has been performing. Goodness, she performed all over Nashville and LA doing jingles, and she had publishing contracts. And you know what? Now I think she appreciates being kind of back home and performing on smaller stages, kind of in her home state, in her hometown. And you can tell music is her passion. So she will be broadcast on July 20th, which is a Friday at 8 p.m. And then following her on the 20th at 8:30 is a great duo. It's Michael Ray Pfeiffer and Kurt Hutchins. They're from Oakdale, Minnesota. A couple of great guys who love playing their own brand of kind of an 80s music. And they especially love playing live as well. So that's fun.
And the last week, the Benson Family Singers start the show.
Let me tell you about them. They're from Faribault, Minnesota, and this is a tried and true family band. Oh, my goodness. Their passion is performing gospel music. They perform all sorts of music. But goodness, we had the kids, oh my goodness, and I don't want to call them kids, but we had David on banjo, Aaron on guitar. They're in high school. We had Luke on mandolin, and little six-year-old Paul, he was singing for us. So we had the most amazing fun time with this group. This is going to be one you do not want to miss. This family is amazing, and the fact that they tour all over the country, attending different festivals together and performing is fun. And then following them on the 27th at 8:30 p.m., we have the Friends of El Sigley Band. This group is led by Bruce Nelson from Earhart, Minnesota. And this is a great group of friends from kind of Minnesota Lake Country who play together all over Lake Country. So if you see them, they're in folk, gospel tunes, country, that sort of thing. But an amazing group, Friends of El Sigley Band, on the 27th.
Well, you got gospel, country, rock, ballad, Americana. You got a lot of different kind of musical genres to share with our Prairie Public audience. It's called Prairie Musicians. It debuts this Friday at 8 o'clock and runs on Fridays for the rest of July on the television service of Prairie Public. Barb Gravel is the Prairie Public production manager and produces this show. So, congratulations on another season.
Thank you so much, Doug. Thank you.
Coming up on Main Street, we'll visit with Bill Thomas. He stopped by the StoryCorps booth in Bismarck. First, though, the news with Todd.
Thank you, Doug. Parts of southern North Dakota experienced heavy rain, hail, and strong winds overnight, and that pattern could repeat tonight. Tyler Kranz is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Bismarck.
We saw quite a bit of rain here in Bismarck. At least here at the airport, we measured 1.92 inches of rain from the past 24 hours, and that was enough to cause some flash flooding in certain urban areas, especially I know along the Bismarck Expressway. My car actually got stuck in the floodwaters this morning and had to be towed out.
Grant says there were some reports of small hail, but the storms carried very strong winds.
looks like the highest wind gust we've gotten so far was 2 miles east of Moffett, 91 mile per hour wind gust down there.
And tonight there could be another round of severe weather in southern and central North Dakota, moving into the north central and northeast probably after midnight.
The main threats would once again be damaging wind gusts in excess of 60 miles per hour. And we can't rule out the flooding, especially now that the ground is already super saturated in many areas, including the Bismarck-Mandan area. It's really not going to take too much more rain to start seeing some flooding again.
Grant says people just need to be aware of the threat and look for any further watches or warnings tonight. Smithfield Foods Incorporated is marking the 10th anniversary of its Helping Hungry Homes program. Part of that celebration includes a major donation to the Great Plains Food Bank. Dennis Pittman is Senior Director for Hunger Relief for Smithfield Foods.
It really makes us feel good that we can come and be a small part of trying to relieve some of the hunger issues there are here in North Dakota.
Smithfield Foods is the largest pork processor and largest hog producer in the world. As a way of helping out, the company has donated 40,000 pounds of its product to the Great Plains Food Bank. CEO Steve Sellent says the donation will go a long way in helping meet needs in Northwest North Minnesota and across North Dakota.
Every time that we ask our clients and our partner food pantries what they could use more of, the top answer is invariably protein products in general and food products in particular. It's just something that we never seem to have enough of to meet the need.
Sellent says every month more than 56,000 people turn to the Great Plains Food Bank. He says that equates to one of every nine households seeking some form of food assistance. From the Prairie Public Newsroom, I'm Todd McDonald.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined again in studio by Bill Thomas. He's our director of radio here at Prairie Public.
Hey, Doug.
And we've been talking a lot about StoryCorps.
It's exciting.
Their mobile tours in Bismarck. They've set up shop for the month of July, pretty much. They're looking for people to sign up and tell their stories, as only StoryCorps can record them. It's a wonderful service. And we've talked a number of times about the people who work for StoryCorps, but you have now just spoken to a couple of facilitators, the people who are actually inside the trailer. Huh?
Right. They help you out when you come to do this story. They're Savannah Winchester and Madison Mullen, and they travel around. And I wanted to talk to them because I thought, what an interesting job this would be, you know, going around the country, town to town, a month per town, and they do 10 cities a year. Bismarck is this month. They'll be there through the end of July. And having all these different people come in to talk about their stories. And now they don't interview you. You know, you come in with somebody, a relative or friend, and you talk to each other. But they help the whole process along. And I have to tell you, I was asking them, you know, what kind of stories they were hearing. And I thought she said, well, we were in Texas and Wyoming, and now we're here, and we've been hearing a lot of ranting stories. I thought, like, oh, man, people are really upset. But actually, she said ranching stories. So
here they are.
So I was just in Jackson for about 2 days, and sometimes it's not always the most interesting story, right, that you're hearing that touches you. Sometimes it's just being with people. So I came from a trip with my family and got to sit down with another family of daughters, and I'm one of three sisters. And honestly, just sitting with people and seeing how they approach family time and their family traditions was really touching for me, and that was in Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think people come in with all sorts of expectations. We have the StoryCorps fan who's very eager and sort of knows everything about StoryCorps, and they're just excited to be there. And then we have folks who are very nervous or maybe a little bit hesitant. And so our job as facilitators is to really pretty quickly try to read what it is that folks are trying to get out of that experience and help them have that experience no matter what it looks like. So for the folks who are more nervous, we try to spend a little bit more time going over what we'll be doing, what it will look like, and letting them know that they have no obligation to release the audio to us, and just making sure that we're meeting people where we're at.
So I think one of the best parts about StoryCorps is people are coming in and they have the opportunity to have us archive their recording at the Library of Congress at the American Folklife Center, but they're under no obligation to do so. First and foremost, this is their recording, it's their story, and when they leave here, they'll get an email with a digital download of their recording to keep for them for their own selves and their family. So it doesn't have to be public. Ultimately, nothing that's said in that booth has to leave the booth. If it can be kept private to you and your family, you can decide exactly who's listening to it, or you can archive it at the Library of Congress so that it could be saved for future generations to have, so other people can have an idea of how you walked through the world and the experiences that you've had.
Mm-hmm. So what's like the best and worst part about working for StoryCorps?
Oh, boy. We get to travel to 10 cities a year. We get to see new places, have new experiences, and meet all kinds of people. And I'd say one of the best experiences is being surprised by the people who come in. So sometimes, you know, like everyone else, you have expectations or you have first impressions. And sometimes when you walk into that recording studio, those are just completely shattered, and you get to have a really different experience with someone that you would never get to have otherwise. So that's really special to me. I wouldn't call traveling the worst, but sometimes it gets tiring. You know, I am definitely tired of packing all of my things into a suitcase every month and moving. I think this month I've moved about 4 times from New York to Jackson to here. So it's always great when we can get into a new spot and settle in for the month and just know that's going to be our home for the month.
How about you, Madison?
I mean, for me, the best part about this job, and even on days when I'm tired or I struggle a little bit, I think keeping in mind that we're building an archive for people to be able to hear from folks who are like them in some way. You know, a lot of people, especially in small towns, but also in big cities, they have experiences or identities that they think no one else has. And I think that the archive that we're building will be a really powerful tool for them to realize that there's someone else out there who exists like me, and they're living a full life. And I think that that's a source of empowerment for folks.
Well, they have lots of stories they've heard and probably some stories they will remember.
Yeah, you know, it's a great project. It's free. You can sign up. Go to prairiepublic.org and sign up for StoryCorps.
Coming up next on Main Street, a discussion about social media and anxiety.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Is the news getting you down, literally? 24-hour news cycles generate a lot of urgency and angst with stories about corruption or collusion or economic fears. And as our smartphones reach out to make sure we're up to date, there's growing concern that technology might be doing more harm than good to our mental health. Wallace Jackman is a psychologist with the Avera Behavioral Health Center in Sioux Falls, and he thinks media-induced anxiety and depression is worthy of a national conversation. He sat down with Lori Walsh, the host of South Dakota Public Broadcasting's In the Moment.
Thanks for stopping by, Dr. Jackman.
Thank you. Good morning.
How long has this been a topic of interest for you as a social worker?
The media-induced piece has been something that's been of interest for the last 3 years, but anxiety and depression is something I've worked with for about the past 20 to 25 years.
And I think everyone, you know, inherently sort of feels like, oh, yes, that affects me. Are you talking about low-level anxiety and depression, clinical addiction? Is there a spectrum here that you're interested in?
I think so. I mean, when I first started researching this topic, I started off too broad by just indicating the concept of media, because media denotes many different categories or areas of our life. It could be the news media, it could be social media. Primarily, the newer research has revolved around social media, such as Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Pinterest, those types of sites, because that's where folks spend a majority of their time.
So that's your focus now? Is that sort of media?
For the most part,
oh, see,
yes.
I was thinking media as in like the news media. That's where my brain went.
It certainly can be included. Yeah. I mean, there's a wealth of research even since the 1930s regarding the news, television, radio, and how that can have a traumatic impact on children and adolescents. Mm-hmm. So that's a fairly well-known factor that the news media, especially events such as war, I mean, from the 30s and 40s, and thinking about World War I and II, that we know that those types of news information sites that folks will access, even since, like I said, the 30s or 40s, will lead to some levels of depression and more so anxiety and trauma symptoms for not just children and adolescents, but for adults.
All right. So the Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Pinterest factor, Instagram, is that just based on what do we have the data?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's okay. There's data to support that there's a correlation and a link between anxiety and depression and accessing certain social media sites. There's 1.7 billion users of Facebook right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that is extensive. And it's the site that folks access the most. And the reason why the focus is more towards smartphone use and these applications more so than just the television media is people have more access to information through their smartphones than the folks in the 30s and 40s. You had to sit in front of a radio or TV to access that information,
sure.
which you didn't have access to when you were working or when you're in your car.
Yeah,
and
right.
So now you're able to access this information pretty much anywhere if you have a smartphone.
And does it matter what kind of information you're looking at? Is there a different kind of impact if you're, you know, looking at your friend's vacation versus if what you're using Facebook for, which many people are, to look at politics and, you know, environmental coverage? So many people are, you know, looking for news content from their social media sites now, and maybe people are just checking in on the grandkids.
Yeah, there's positive aspects of using social networking sites, too. I mean, I'm in the process of attempting to try to build a deck, and so I'm looking at Pinterest to figure out how to set those posts. And so there can be some positive aspects of, you know, looking at the vacation photos or what grandma's doing in Virginia and whatnot. But a majority of the research points towards the negative consequences. Folks spend, on average, 58 minutes a day on Facebook. You think of the productivity factor of how much time that's being taken away from other things that they could be doing in their life. And that's the average. So obviously there are some individuals that are spending more than an hour a day, and that's just on Facebook. We're not referring to any other sites that they might be accessing. So to answer your question regarding that spectrum, yes, there is a variation on the amount of anxiety and depression one might incur based upon what sites that they're accessing, what information they're accessing, and the amount of time that they're spending on the internet or on social media.
Yeah. When I think about Twitter, when I first set up Twitter on my smartphone, I set up notifications to come through because for work I sort of wanted to see, you know, the news as it was happening. And I was astonished at how fast Twitter moves. So there's a pace issue with uh-huh. Facebook, but particularly with Twitter, it changes so quickly.
Yes, there was a news columnist, I believe he's from the New York Times, that spoke of Twitter being news media on steroids, is what
yeah.
he referred to it as, and it really is. I mean, you're just inundated with information constantly. You'd almost have to stop the app or only have two or three connections to decrease the amount of data that you're receiving from people.
Right. All right. The latest data. The latest information, how are you putting it all together? Because there's so much.
Yeah, I had to narrow it down to the social media pieces, the Facebook, the Reddits, the Pinterest, those pieces, and Facebook being of primary importance because that's the one most people access. Approximately 75% of teenagers use Facebook, and most adults that have access to smartphones are accessing Facebook. So that's where a majority of my focus has been, and that's where some of the more abundant research is regarding anxiety, depression associated with social networking sites.
How bad is it?
It's bad. I mean, just go to Applebee's or go to a McDonald's and sit down and see how many, do your own research, and you'll see how many people are using their smartphones and addicted to them. Mm. I mean, there are people that are having conversations, are trying to have conversations, and the other person is on their smartphone. There's one term called phubbing, P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G.
Okay.
It refers to the use of your phone and snubbing. And so the person is snubbing you even in the context of supposedly having a conversation with you. So it's pretty bad. I mean, if you think, too, about the accidents that folks are having with distracted driving and texting, I'm certain the police department has some data with regards to the number of accidents increasing based upon people's problematic cell phone use.
How do you know that it's, you know, that it's problematic, and how do you know when it's addiction? And, you know, how do you know when, like, you know, it's causing me some kind of, you know, some stress, but yet okay. this is an actual problem. Well, how do you know when you have a problem?
That's a good question. Yeah. So as a psychologist, as a clinical social worker, that's a somewhat of a broad question. How do I know anything is a problem,
right,
or an addiction? And so you generally look at two or three factors. One, does it interfere with a person's thinking and their sleep and their behavioral patterns? Is it creeping into those areas? Secondly, is it interfering with their occupational work? Is it interfering with their work and their interpersonal relationships? Does it carry over into those areas of their life? If so, then it could be creeping into the addiction field.
Yeah. Productivity. You mentioned how many people can access this at work or even have to use it mm-hmm. for work. So there's a certain amount of requirement mm-hmm. That you're going to use social media at work, but yet you're supposed to be able to manage, you know, the work time and the personal time. Are there numbers or do you have concerns about just really what's happening in business and in productivity for people that...
That would be a good area to research. I mean, anecdotally speaking, with whether it be my clinic manager or I teach through the University of South Dakota School of Medicine and University of South Dakota Psychiatry Program, just anecdotally, I see it interfere with the students' ability to be productive in the classroom. And then speaking with other managers of, like I said, my clinic manager, hiring and having people that are supposed to be doing their work, but instead they're accessing social media sites. So it's a consistent issue. It's a consistent problem, I think, problematic in many areas of our lives, even the Sioux Falls school system. I'm not certain what their policy is right now, yet I know with my own children who attended school there that they, for the most part, said, no, you're not supposed to have phones, but they almost had to give up because they're consistently having cell phone parents having to come back in to pick up the kid's cell phone after school, and it just became too much of a problem, so they just had to let it go.
And I think that's a really good point, this notion of we almost have to give up because parents, employers, teachers, in some ways, what if we did just give up and let it happen? There's real problems to that.
Yeah, I'd read a study that spoke of that giving up piece, and I think in Great Britain they don't allow cell phones in schools. I don't know how they got around to doing it, but they don't, because they had seen an increase in folks' anxiety and bullying, bullying incidents that are occurring over cell phone use. No, I believe parents have to set some sorts of limits, if nothing else. Having dinner time with no cell phone use. That's a rule that I have, is if we're going to go out to eat or we're going to have dinner, there will be no cell phone use or you're not going.
Yeah.
There was a research article in which 87% of teenagers sleep with their cell phones.
Wow.
That's incredible. You know, so that means only 13% of parents are keeping their children from not using, having their cell phone. And most sleep with the cell phones under their pillow or in their hands. And I know just from speaking with clients outpatient that the parents will say, well, they use the cell phone as their alarm clock.
Yeah.
And that's a cop out. I mean, we've had alarm clocks for what, right. 60, 70
years. But don't
years.
You think the people who have designed the phone knew that?
Yes.
They're like, we're going to put an alarm in here and we're going to put, you know, the most useful, you know, snoozable, put your own music in this alarm
right.
on here because we want people to have this. I mean, who else has designed a product?
Exactly.
That has become that ubiquitous in our lives.
Yes.
To where you will sleep with it. What mm-hmm. else do you sleep with other than your pillow?
Right.
But you're right. People sleep with their technology or sleep with it very close by, but often it's right in the bed with them, under their pillow or in
their
hand.
That's incredibly high, 87%. Yeah. I mean, I would venture to guess some people don't sleep with their spouses 87% of the time. So it's just incredible. And so we know there's a link between less sleep or so the quality of sleep and depression. It's one of the first questions psychiatrists and psychologists will ask on the inpatient unit is, what's your sleep pattern like? Yeah. And we know that that has an impact on folks' mood.
Right. Talk a little bit about what can be done.
Well, one, as a parent, if I'm speaking to any parents out there, being a parent of four myself, I know that it's difficult to set a good example for our children. But I think that's one, is we can't be texting and driving or accessing our smartphones when we're supposed to be having conversations, not just with our children, but I think with our adults or our peers or our colleagues. So I think first, setting an example. Secondly, I think being more aware. That's one of the things I'm going to present at the conference, because there's very little information about what do you do. So you're asking a great question. We have the research knowing, okay, it's a problem, anxiety, depression, trauma, sleep disturbance. We know it, the bullying, cyberbullying. We know that. Okay, what the heck do we do about it?
Right.
There's very little research about that piece. And so that's some of what I'm going to speak on. And so one of the things to answer your question is that of mindfulness. So just being more mindful. I mean, now that I've told you that 87% of folks sleep with their cell phones under their pillow, okay, be mindful. Are you doing that? How often do you do that? Is there something else differently that you can do? And I said 58% of our people use 58 minutes a day on Facebook. Can you cut that down to 45 minutes? So just being more mindful of the times that it's interfering in one's lives.
Right. And it was raining last night mm-hmm. outside of my house, and I wanted to sit outside in the rain, mm-hmm. intentionally left my phone inside, and had one of those moments where I got a little twitchy mm-hmm. and thought, what if there's an emergency? What mm-hmm. if? So part of this is driven by our fear of missing out, the FOMO.
Yes, yeah.
Another fun modern acronym.
Correct.
Is that I'm afraid that I'm going to be, and anytime, and I'm sure you understand as a parent too, if you're a parent or you have any kind of family members, loved ones, if you're away from them, this is now the easiest, but it didn't used to be like that. You used to go to the, you'd leave the phone number of the restaurant with the babysitter.
Right.
Now you take the phone with you on date night and keep checking on the kids, mm-hmm. whereas before you could sort of unplug. So that, pay attention to that feeling of sort of that anxious,
correct.
That
term FOMO, fear of missing out, there's research that supports that drives anxiety. That makes the anxiety increase because of that fear. It's a fear based on the uncertainty, the unknown of what if. And when you talk about a generalized anxiety disorder, that's one of the key components to an anxiety disorder is it's based on fear. It's based upon the unknown, not knowing what I'm going to do if this bad thing may or may not happen.
Yeah.
And so the cell phone use, being able to stay connected with others, that FOMO, that really can drive anxiety for folks.
Right. And the fact that you're going to be largely alone. If you're sitting at the dinner table and nobody else has a phone, or you don't have a
yes.
phone and everyone else does,
mm-hmm.
You're going to be different. You're going to kind of stand out. And especially mm-hmm. for kids, that's that can be, depending on the child, a hard thing.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you got a lot of work ahead of you.
Yeah.
Is this something you're going to really stick, be a focus for you professionally for a while, that you think?
Most certainly.
I
definitely have a couple papers that I'll be hopefully getting published from this research that I've conducted. So yes, I can see this would be a niche for me.
That was Lori Walsh, host of South Dakota Public Broadcasting's In the Moment, with her guest Wallace Jackman, a psychologist with the Avera Behavioral Health Center in Sioux Falls. Dakota Datebook is next.
Minot Summer Theater presents One Strange Night, July 5th through the 9th. What happens when a binge-drinking mother-in-law, a conniving art thief, a flirtatious young woman, and a bumbling police officer and his straight-laced partner converge on the home of James and Lori Nelling? It's sure to be one strange night, indeed. This farcical comedy has all the makings of an evening of laughter. More information about Minot Summer Theater can be found online at minotstateu.edu/theater, on Facebook, or by phone at 701-858-3228.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by North Dakota Living, celebrating more than 65 years of featuring the great people and places of North Dakota and proudly serving the members of North Dakota's electric and telephone cooperatives.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 3rd. North Dakota remembers World War I. A Loyalty Week event was held in North Dakota during the first week of July in 1918. It was sponsored by the North Dakota Council of Defense and the North Dakota Commission of Agriculture. 3,000 people descended on Bismarck for the opening festivities that included a monster aquatic spectacle starring Miss Bertha Drago, a pretty diving girl. An evening illumination of the city was to be accompanied by a band concert and a street dance. Another Loyalty Week event was the Dakota Tractor Show. It was billed as the greatest exhibition of agricultural machinery in the history of the state. Organizers anticipated that 35,000 farmers would attend, plus a considerable number of interested spectators. On this date, the show began in the morning with a demonstration of 21 tractors. Some of the tractors, like International Harvester and Case, are still familiar to us today. Other less familiar machines include Fordson, Avery, and Happy Farmer. A serious plowing competition was scheduled for the afternoon on land described as dry as a bone and tough as leather, presenting every difficulty which will be encountered on the average farm. Loyalty Week continued with a 4th of July extravaganza that was scheduled to start with patriotic speeches at the Capitol grounds, featuring Corporal Smith of General Pershing's staff. On furlough from the Army, Smith had served in France and would tell the audience about his experiences. It was noted that the grounds provided ample shade, a pleasant spot on a hot day. Corporal Smith, who had given 500 speeches upon returning to the States, was billed as having a fine voice, which would allow everyone in the audience to hear him. The speeches would be followed by a gigantic parade, including bands, trade unions, war workers, farmers, fraternal organizations, Steele's cavalry, decorated wagons, fine horses, and school children who would form the American flag and sing as they marched. Following the parade, Corporal Smith would introduce the movie Pershing's Crusaders. The day would be capped off with a band concert and street dance. Saturday would feature a meeting of councils of defense from across the state, and the week's festivities would end with more band concerts and another street dance. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
President Trump's choice to fill a vacancy on the Supreme Court could have a profound effect on how Americans choose their leaders.
Everything from partisan gerrymandering to enforcement of the Voting Rights Act to the question of whether voter identification laws are going to be upheld as constitutional, to issues of campaign finance.
How the next Supreme Court justice could influence future elections on the next morning edition.
That's tomorrow morning, right here on Prairie Public.
Wednesday on Main Street? Well, we're preempted for Capitol Steps. Politics takes a holiday. Capitol Steps puts the mock in democracy, with satirists performing as Donald Trump, Bernie Sanders, Mike Pence, Nancy Pelosi, and Vladimir Putin. So tune in for this hour of bipartisan humor tomorrow, where Main Street should be, Capitol Steps will be. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.